Hello, and welcome to The Coastal Lawyer. My name is Ernie Lee, and I'm an attorney in private practice in Savannah, Georgia. This broadcast is copywritten by The Coastal Lawyer, LLC, 2007. Well, today is August the 3rd, and it's a very hot and rainy day in Savannah, GA. But it's August, so I guess it's supposed to be hot, right? Well, as you know, if you've listened in the past, my law practice has three major areas. First one being real estate, the second one being estate planning, and the third one being small business development. And my goal as an attorney is to empower my clients to give them information as well as advice so they can make a better informed decision. And today's topic is mortgage fraud. Okay, so what is mortgage fraud? Well, I looked up a report from the Mortgage and Real Estate Executives Board. This is dated on May 1st, 2006. And this group defines mortgage fraud as either lying or misrepresentation or omission of material facts on a loan application that a lender or an underwriter uses to fund, purchase, or insure a loan. And it's rapidly becoming one of the most serious and prevalent white-collar crimes in this country. Okay, well, let's ask, who commits mortgage fraud? Well, this report, it was actually surprising that the identity of perpetrators of mortgage fraud. And so they kind of broke this down, and while maybe approximately 20% of all fraud cases involve borrowers who, again, misrepresent on a loan application, so they otherwise would not be able to qualify for a loan. But the problem is growing because now it involves industry professionals, inside industry professionals who misrepresent a number of factors. So in other words, they are falsifying loan applications. And these facts would be something like borrower income, you know, the buyers, do they have the income to actually buy the property? They also misrepresent people's debts, also what their other assets are, or also in the employment record of the borrower. And usually these are in multiple loan transactions. This type of misrepresentation also affects more than one financial institution and generally involves co-conspirators who corroborate the fabricated information by providing documentation to support the misrepresentation. And this would be basically such as inflated appraisals or inaccurate employment histories. Now, a former Nevada mortgage regulator told attendees at a recent Source Media non-prime lending symposium that the key to combating mortgage fraud is to having procedures in place to focus on prevention and early detection. That's also another way of saying due diligence. Now, the Mortgage Asset Research Institute released recently a new report, and among the findings is that Georgia, which traditionally had been the capital of mortgage fraud, has slipped to number 4, thanks in part to creating a legal environment where people know if they commit mortgage fraud, they're going to go away for a long time. They're basically going to serve jail time. While Florida is the number 1 state for prime mortgage fraud, that's followed by California, Michigan, and Georgia. So for prime loans in the metro areas with the highest early payment defaults are along the Gulf Coast affected by natural disasters. Again, hurricanes, floods, that kind of thing. But Florida is also the top state for non-prime mortgage fraud or subprime lending. I know we hear a lot about that in the news. And again, that is followed by Utah as well as Michigan. Well, the question then is, why has Georgia slipped? And I personally believe it's due in part to a better educated bar and strict laws and harsh penalties. Basically, regulators are going after mortgage frauders, and they're running them out of the state, or at least we're trying to drop it dramatically. Now, I get calls from out-of-state lenders asking me to do a witness-only closing. And you may not have heard this before, But this is where the mortgage company prepares the closing documents and the lawyer only acts as a notary. Well, when this happens, big time alarms go off. Okay, that was our big time alarm sound effect. But seriously, when this happens, alarms go off in my head because basically this is an unethical way to practice. As a matter of fact, during the past 3 months, I was getting 5 or 6 calls each week asking me to do signature only closings. As a matter of fact, last week I had a lender call saying that she usually does signature only closings, but she had a lender who said the HUD closing statement had to be completed by an attorney. So she had a dilemma. She had the closing set for that afternoon, and she asked me if I wanted to make some quick money. Well, again, that alarm bell went off, and I said, well, I thanked her for calling me, and then I explained that this is frowned upon by the state bar here in Georgia. It's not ethical, and I don't practice law that way. Plus, I don't want to jeopardize my law practice, my law license, or most importantly, my reputation in the community. And then I kind of asked her never to call me my office again. And basically, this, if I had done this, even if it appeared to be legitimate, I don't know the mortgage broker, I don't know who all the parties are involved, and I would be putting my seal of approval on this loan. And that starts leading down a very slippery slope, which could lead into mortgage fraud. Well, why do you think Georgia has slipped? Well, again, like I stated before, I feel mostly it's due to a tighter regulation, better informed lawyers, and real estate professionals, and law enforcement going after criminals and putting them into prison. Now, I thought this was interesting. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports that mortgage fraud is running rampant across the United States, posing potential financial damage or ruin to homeowners and even the local community. The FBI reports that the illegal activity can have a domino effect on the local housing market and the economy at large. When it happens, some get a quick payoff, but the rest of the community then suffers, as what happens with most crime. The neighborhood starts to go down. While there are an infinite number of variations on fraud for profit, these are some of the most common. And the first one is flipping. Now, this term has gotten confused because of very popular TV shows such as Flip This House, which really isn't flipping at all. These types of deals in which houses are acquired legitimately, improvements are made, and the houses are resold quickly are known in the business as quick turns. That is different from flipping. There's nothing wrong with doing a quick turnaround. It becomes illegal when people start lying about the improvements, the value of improvements, or lying to a qualified borrower. I've heard realtors talk that somebody buys an old house, they paint it, they put in a quick kitchen, kind of like a Home Depot quick kitchen, not maligning Home Depot at all, but that's all they've really done, and then they double the price on the house. There's basically been no, the value hasn't gone up because of the improvements, because there's really been no major improvements. Also, flipping involves a fraudulent appraisal and, again, a grossly inflated sales price. Now, the second type of mortgage fraud could be what's known as straw buyers. One of the most frequent types of mortgage fraud occurs when straw buyers are used to hide the identity of the true borrower who would not qualify for the mortgage. The perpetrators use a straw buyer because they have good credit and can get the loan. Straw buyers may be duped into thinking that they're investing in real estate that will be rented out when the rental payments with the rental payments paying the mortgage. In fact, no payments are made and the lender forecloses on the loan. Or sometimes straw buyers are in on the scam and are getting a cut of the proceeds. I know from talking with some other attorneys up in Atlanta, where the FBI came in and did a sting operation on some straw buyers, what was happening there is they had an insider who was working at a college in a college registrar's office, and they were pulling college seniors' Social Security numbers and their ID. It's basically identity theft because they had fresh, clean credit, and they were misrepresenting who they were. And then all of a sudden, this college senior gets her first job and then gets sued because a mortgage that she is on has been foreclosed when the college student never knew about the transaction due to the identity theft. A third type is appraisal fraud. Now, appraisal fraud is a part of the of most mortgage fraud scams. It's a big part of it. A dishonest appraiser inflates the value of the property, and when the seller gets the check at the closing for a bogus amount, he pays off the appraiser and anyone else involved in the scam, and usually the borrower doesn't make any payments and the house goes into foreclosure. So you can see this trend where you've got empty houses or houses that go into foreclosure, the grass is not cut, maybe vandals come in, and it basically depreciates the value of the entire neighborhood. Leading into that, the next type of mortgage fraud would be foreclosure schemes. These are particularly evil because they prey on people with big enough financial problems that they're in danger of losing their home. A homeowner in the early stages of foreclosure may be contacted by a fraudster who says that he or she can help the homeowner get rid of his debt and save his house for an upfront fee, which the fraudster takes and then disappears. In another scheme, a homeowner is approached by a con artist who offers to help them refinance the loan. They sign documents and find out later that they actually sold the house to the fraudster. Then they face eviction. These sometimes are either older citizens or citizens who are not very savvy, and again, probably don't read what they're signing. Now, here are some tips for recognizing and preventing mortgage fraud. For the seller, always, always get references on real estate and mortgage professionals and check them. Make sure they're licensed within the state, county, or the city, and just don't make an assumption. Also, be cautious about someone approaching you about selling your property, especially if your property's not currently on the market. Do not agree to an amount above your asking price, especially if you're asked to refund the difference after the closing or if the extra money is to be used for repairs or improvements that you know are unnecessary. And then also be wary of offers to save you from foreclosure. Work with your lender instead and insist on getting a complete set of the closing documents. For buyers, be extremely wary of no money down, cash back at closing, investment opportunities. Remember the old but very true saying, if it's too good to be true, then generally it's not true, no matter how slick someone talks. Now, there are different types of federal programs out there that you can get into a home for very little money, but we're talking about no money, cash down, and then cash back at closing. That is definitely, sirens should be going off for that as well. Also, check the sales history of the property. Several sales within a short period of time could indicate inflated values, and have your own real estate agent or appraiser establish the value. Again, outside independent appraiser, it can be your best bet when you're in real estate. Another way to check this would be to go to your local tax assessment office or recorder of deeds to make sure the seller really owns the property. In some Georgia counties, you can actually do this online. Just call your local tax assessor's office. Don't let someone else use your name or Social Security number to buy a property, especially if they offer to pay you for using it. Folks, this is fraud. I mean, front and clear. You would never do that for somebody else. Don't offer to do it. It's basically fraud. And also, deal directly with the lender or the mortgage broker. Do not let a third party arrange your loan. Again, big time to get yourself in trouble. Now, for anyone, I think it's important to insist on getting a complete set of the closing documents. In my office, we always give our closing clients a hard copy, and we also scan it and put it on a CD in a PDF format. And basically, the reason why I started doing this is that I would go to file my taxes, and I'd pull a statement out of the closing package, and then lo and behold, it would never get back in there. And then when I needed it again, it was gone. And so I've started putting my own documents on a CD-ROM for archives. And I thought, you know, it doesn't cost anything really. Let's give it to our closing clients. And I think people have really appreciated that. Also, do not sign any documents with information where it's left blank or that could contain inaccurate information. Read the documents. Always read the documents. And finally, read and understand everything you're asked to sign. And talk to an attorney if you need something explained. I always tell my clients to read it, and if you don't understand it, call me. As a matter of fact, a lot of times when I am at a closing, especially with a first-time home buyer, people have heard, read everything, and I agree with that, or have the attorney explain it to you in detail. Again, some security deeds may be 14, 15, 16 pages long of boilerplate, and usually what I do with my clients is I say, I'm going to give you copies of everything that you sign, plus I go over and explain it to them in detail. I don't read every word to them, but I do, as my duty as a closing attorney, is to explain everything on the documents. Well, today's topic was mortgage fraud, and this topic came as a special request. And so if you would like to make a request for future Coastal Lawyer topics, please feel free to send me feedback or drop me an email. As a note, I've been asked to be the executive producer on a television production that's to be filmed in Savannah later this month and into September. And I hope to have a special podcast discussing this new venture and what all it entails. I was surprised when I got into this that it's really no different from running a small business. Instead of widgets, you're making movies or television shows. The costs and the headaches due to poor planning can be the same. Check back for later details of this future Coastal Lawyer podcast and adventure. If you have any questions on closing costs or any real estate, estate planning, or small business legal questions, please visit my website at www.ernielee.com. That's E-R-N-I-E-L-E-E. Or give me a call at 912-231-2000. Well, this is Ernie Lee signing off. Coastal Lawyer saying so long for now. And hope to have you back in a later broadcast. This has been a production of the Coastal Lawyer, LLC. Copyright 2007. So long, everybody.